This is Robert Cappuccio. Welcome to the Self-Help Antidote, a weekly dose of reason, perspective, and insight, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore authentic strategies and insights around personal transformation. Our commitment to you is to bring you some of the world's leading experts in the domains of fitness, wellness, coaching, and behavior change, separating fact from fallacy. Joanna Meneses has been a friend of mine for many years. In this episode, we discuss how the loss of her parents shaped her life, as well as her entire worldview. Her mother passed when she was relatively young, her father over two decades later. Although their deaths occurred at very different stages of Jo's life, her grief over their deaths were in many ways the catalyst for her own rebirth. We talk about her journey through losing her mother, being a struggling artist in New York City, to becoming an international Pilates instructor, to starting her own company in the Azores after the passing of her father. We talk about movement, life, and most importantly, what Joanna discovered about herself. Enjoy the episode, and thank you for joining us. Hey, Jo.
Hey, Bobby.
Oh, this is going to be quite a ride. I'm really excited to have. So those of you listening, Jo has been a dear friend of mine for forever. Like, we were friends actually before we were even friends. We just didn't know it. And for those of you who are saying, well, that sounds weird, it is, but that's what you should come to expect from me by now. We had a circle of friends and we just hovered in each other's periphery. And then we actually ended up going out on a date. And going through the whole date, we didn't even realize, like, we knew each other well. Like, her best mates, my best mates, they were all connected. It all worked itself out. We've been really close friends ever since. And I'm excited to bring her on because I think her story is inspiring. It's informative. And she's just an absolute rock star. Hello, Jo.
Bobby, that is such a beautiful intro. Thank you so much for having me, brother. You have no idea how big of an honor this is. You are the smartest human being I know. So I'm just going to try and keep up. But yeah, brother, you're like family.
That's enough. Fuck off. So anyway, yeah, getting into the story.
Oh, we can swear? Oh, yeah. Bring it.
I just have to check that little explicit content box. All right. So fun fact is Jo was part of, if you're, I know a lot of people listening to this are not part of the health and fitness industry, but enough people are part of the wellness community. So Jo was part of a legendary team at Equinox with Stacey Lee Krause, Willpower and Grace. And they used to call Jo Trucker. And if you go, well, why did they call a trucker? That'll be very apparent by the end of this podcast.
Yes, so it will.
Keep it in first gear there, Jo.
I will do my best.
So here's the reason why I brought you on, not just for my own entertainment, but you were a Pilates instructor, still are, and you were working, you know, different facilities within New York. Yeah, you had a great reputation. You were great at your craft. And then something happened, though, in your life. And I watched this firsthand and it was beautiful. There was just an internal switch. It was almost like, I don't mean this to be offensive. I mean this lovingly. You were driving with one foot all the way down on the accelerator, but kind of like the other foot somewhat down on the brake. And then at one point you just let go of the brake. And like when people talk about go for your dreams, they're talking about you and what happened and, you know, what you did, who you became, where you went. And I'm just going to let you take it from here. What happened? And after that that activating event, what changed?
Whoa. I think what happened is that I was a product of my environment. And my environment was that at 21, turning 22 years old, my mother died. She was 45 of a brain tumor. And that was, I think, the initial click for me. I was raised in a Azorean Portuguese family, and the Azores are the nine islands off of mainland Portugal. And we immigrated to Canada when I was two. And my mother was very wonderful. She was brilliant at balancing the best of the two worlds between our tradition and just being a modern woman in Canada. Mm-hmm. And my father was very Portuguese. He was very connected to his roots. And it's one of the reasons why I still speak the language, because he always spoke Portuguese with us, didn't really learn English very well, and just wanted to constantly be back on the island. So very strict upbringing. So when growing up in Canada, I had that European upbringing, and my father was one of those people that I think a lot of Europeans are. It's just the way that we've been raised. We tend to care what other people think. And after my mom died, being raised mostly in Canada, with those stints that we did back on the island, a few summers, every 3 or 4 years, they would work hard for us to go for an entire month. Once she passed away, I just didn't really care what anybody thought. And it wasn't in a disrespectful way. It was just that I knew deep down that nothing was promised and all we had was today, because she was gone. So there was a dark period there for a couple years. And I had a lot of support from a very large Azorean family. My mom was one of 10 kids. And I had art that I loved, poetry that I wrote. I was always into sports. I was an athlete. And these were all outlets that I had, but I wanted nothing to do with those. For about 2 years, I was in a deep, dark hole, very into exercise. You know, I wanted to come to New York to be an actress. And I always thought I had 5 or 10 pounds to lose. But after my mom died, that changed. And I remember being in a very dark place where I gained about, I think I gained like 30 pounds in just 6 months. Yeah. And when I found the light, literally clawed myself out of that dark hole and had all of those support systems around me, I just decided that nothing was going to stop me. And 4 years after she died, to the day, I moved to New York City to pursue my dream.
So when you say that you didn't care what people thought, you didn't care what people thought to the point where their thoughts shaped you contrary to what you wanted. Correct. So what I'm hearing is you went through something quite traumatic, you know, for anybody who's close to a parent or even not close to a parent, that's very traumatic. And after you came out of a deep period of mourning, the value of self-expression and freedom emerged from the lesson that nothing is permanent and nothing is promised.
Correct. She was such a force. If you ask any of her siblings, they will all tell you she was their favorite, even before she passed away. You know how we tend to talk very highly of someone after they die, but she was everything. She was the sister, the wife, the mother. She kept a home, like her sinks were spotless. I could go on and on. She was funny. She was organized. She just loved to love. And I thought she had so much more life to live. She was only 45 years old. I am now 50. Yeah. I'm literally 5 years older than she had on this earth. That blows my mind to this day. And I felt at a certain point, and I still feel it tends to really magnify as the years go on, that I had a responsibility to her to live not only for me, but for both of us.
That's very interesting.
Try and do everything for her, that everything that she didn't get the chance to experience, everything that she wished maybe she could do and couldn't do because, you know, she was a wife and a mother. I just thought that it was my responsibility to really spread my wings and fly, pun intended.
Right. Okay. So it wasn't just the emergence of values, which is significant. There's almost an implicit promise you made to yourself and your mom. What happened? So you get to New York in your early 20s.
Yeah, I get to New York. It was 1997. And I, of course, like every starting starving artist. I get a restaurant job and I start serving tables. I was really good at it. I had mastered it in Canada already. And, you know, working the restaurant business, you meet some really great characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worked for Mario Batali. I worked for, you know, pubs. I made so much money working, slinging beer, I mean, it was a lot of fun.
It's a great time to be in New York back then.
It was a great time to be in New York. Yeah. And then I, as a starving artist, I didn't have a lot of money. I was living in the West Village at the time. And had a membership at the Carmine Recreation Center, which cost $25 per year. That's what I could afford. Me and my friend Eve.
Well, yeah, you're living in the West Village. I mean, very posh for a starving artist.
Yeah, that's another story, complete other story for another time. But yes, I was in the West Village, went to the Carmine Recreation Center to work out 5 days a week. My friend Eve Kerrigan, who was working with me at a restaurant in the West Village as well called La Zoo. Miss you, Eve. She was super cool. We would go to the Carmine Recreation Center and there was rusty weights and maybe one old treadmill. And we would go onto the basketball floor and jump rope and stand on our head and just do weird things, kind of like I do now with certifications.
That reminds me of the Shorefront Y on Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn, where I went. I think it was about, I don't know. I that was upscale. I think that was like $40 a year.
Wow. Wow. Big spender. Yeah, dude. And we had such a great time and we were staying fit. And one day I walked in there and I saw they had a little group fitness room and I saw on the schedule Pilates. Now, I was not into group fitness because at the time it was just spinning, which is not it wasn't as popular as it is now. Still not a fan of spinning, no offense to spinners. And it was spinning and step classes. That was the big group fitness rage going on. Didn't like any of that. So I would just do my own thing. But Pilates was being spoken about everywhere. At that point, I think it was 1997, 98. And I just was very curious. So I did a class and at the time I didn't know what I had done, but I left there. I was a smoker at the time. I left there feeling like I could breathe the New York City smog so much better, feeling longer, taller.
I love now the feeling of smog in the morning.
Exactly. Now I understand what had happened, how we moved in all different planes where normally we're just always in the sagittal plane. But I thought
sagittal plane is very lovely this time of year.
It is. It is beautiful colors. So I decided to look into how I could do this for a living. How can I do this? Keep myself fit, help other people stay fit and still do the theater at night because the restaurant business obviously was taking up all of my time. And then you were sleeping until 11 or 12 and then heading back to work for the evening shift. And up till 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. Glory.
Your
day.
Life is a Netflix special.
I think my life should be a Netflix special. Yeah. Yeah.
Could be. Looking forward to that
what
one.
Happened. I researched Pilates and there is this thing called Google and only a couple. New York Pilates came up, which I think was the, they call it now the, Classical came up one studio and then Stop Pilates, which was a contemporary approach. At the time, I did not know that it was any different, but that was in Toronto where my family lived and I could go there and do the entire full year program, anatomy and all, and stay with family and save money. So that's what happened.
So you chose Stop Pilates, not because of the methodology behind it, but the geography behind it.
I had zero idea that it was any different than any other Pilates out there. And now I thank my lucky stars that I did go with Stop Pilates because I am very outside the box. As a mover, as a coach, I blend modalities and I don't think that for me, being a purist about anything just doesn't work. And Joseph Pilates himself, I mean, he pulled from so many different things, including watching cats move, yoga, worked with boxers, gymnasts, dancers. He was never a purist. So how are we going to be a purist about the Pilates method? I'm not exactly sure. The man was a genius. I think the reason that we even know the word core today started with Joseph Pilates and his powerhouse.
So talk about when you first started teaching Pilates, like what that did. I'm not talking about the methodology or building a clientele. Like, how did that usher you into a new phase of your life? Because you're going from like performing arts, you're working in every possible domain of the food and beverage business. And now you go into a different domain of your life. What happens to you? What does that open you up to? How'd you get hooked up with Willpower and Grace? Like,
cool. That wasn't the plan. The plan wasn't to just go full force into teaching Pilates. The plan was to use Pilates and the money that I can make teaching Pilates to have more time to hone my craft in the theater. But after getting my certification and basically being a staple at the, I call it the mothership, the Stop Pilates headquarters in Toronto, they knew I spoke a couple languages. So my first job was in Bermuda, and my second love from movement is travel. So I loved Bermuda, and I was contracted by a woman there that wanted me to certify people for her in South Africa, where she was from. So they did some deep digging on me and ended up finding one of my master trainers in Boston when they traveled there. And it's an interesting story because they booked a session with her, but did no Pilates. They just basically wanted to know if I was legit and wasn't really like a serial killer on the side, I guess. And
how could you? I mean, in the food and beverage business, now Pilates, like, oh my God, like the performing arts, who has time for serial killing? Because right. Because you need a lot of dedication. It's just not like, you can't just kill one person. You got to keep going and going. It's a horrible career choice.
At least two to be a serial killer. Yeah. So I had no time for that, obviously. And my master trainer, Courtney, was the one that then reached out to Stott and said, you know, I really think we should look at this girl for master training. And that's how I got a bit of time with Moira Stott, who is the founder of Stott Pilates, and became a master trainer. And then I started traveling the world teaching courses in Portuguese, which was another trip. Wow. I mean, I could say pass the salt in Portuguese at my kitchen table, but talk about latissimus dorsi or adductors or glute med, and it's a different story. So I educated myself on Portuguese anatomy. And then that the dream of Saturday Night Live, because that's what it was. I wanted to be a performer on Saturday Night Live, kind of fell by the wayside because I was living this other dream, getting paid to travel the world to places that I've always wanted to see for free, doing what I love and moving and breathing people in this amazing modality that most people hadn't even heard of yet.
So you are like living this dream. And it's very spontaneous. It's something that you adapted to. You didn't plan to do it. And then you went to teach a course in Portuguese in Munich, Germany, and it all fell apart. Talk about that.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's one of your strengths. And we're too early in the story to really explore how much of a strength it is. But openness and spontaneity and adaptability. So I read a book a long time ago by Bill Zane, not the actor, the speechwriter for former CEO of GE, Jack Welch. The title of the book was Jacked Up. And so one of the things with Jack Welch that he would ask personally on an interview is, tell me exactly in explicit detail what your five-year plan is. And anyone who had a clearly defined, written out, solid five-year plan, he would end the interview because it was like the dynamics of not only the rate at which the world changes, but the rate at which GE changes on a quarterly basis. If you know exactly what's going to happen over the next 5 years, you're either delusional or a bullshit artist, and neither has a place here at GE. And it was about adaptability. the ability to recognize and capitalize on opportunities as they emerge and adapt. And that is something that I've always admired about you.
I'm so fucking relieved because I thought you were going to ask me for my 5-year plan. I got nothing written down, brother.
So you're relieved at what I was going to say. So I read this book titled Jacked Up, and I said, wow, the title really reminds me of Joe Meneses.
No, the whole 5-year plan, I guess, scared me. Probably because you just don't know. You don't know. And all the yogi text, all of the self-help that I have read and tried to educate myself on when I was in a dark place and needed something or someone to turn to help me, they all come back to the same thing: breath, and all we have is now. And again, going back to the experience of having lost my mother so young, I knew that to be true. Yeah. So willpower and grace.
Yes.
So I get my first gig as a master trainer, and I go to South Africa and I spend 3 months there. And then I come back to New York. I had missed it so much. And I went to every gym and every studio that was starting to open and tried to figure out how I was now going to fit back into the city that I loved. And it was, you know, Pilates classes, but it was very hard to get people to understand even what Pilates was. So I just got my free weeks everywhere and just researched what everyone was doing to try and find a way. And honestly, it was to try and find a way to get a business plan together. So the woman that hired me to go to South Africa, she was getting a divorce, and I wanted to try and get her to understand that she needed to open a studio in New York, and I was going to run that for her. That was the plan. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening was I got an amazing gig with the Printing House Fitness and Racket Club, which was in the West Village as well. And in meeting a few more people that were in the industry here in New York, I met Brett Hobell, who lived across the street from me. I was living on Cornelia Street. And a friend of mine that worked at Poe Restaurant said, oh, you're teaching fitness now? Oh, you need to meet our friend Brett. He lives right across the street from us. He teaches fitness. You got to meet him.
So for people who aren't industry people, who are these people?
Brett Hobell?
Yeah. Talk about like who is this person? Like the Printing House. People are listening to this. Like, I don't know. They're sitting somewhere in like Melbourne, Australia right now going, all right. So she worked at the printing press as a Pilates instructor. I'm not understanding how this story comes together.
Oh, you want me to elaborate?
Yes, that's what I said. Elaborate. Yes, oh, if you use such big words, fine.
Got it. So the Printing House was a very special gym in the West Village in New York City back in the day. Mm-hmm. It was like the last of the mom and pop shops. It wasn't a franchise. It had a pool on the roof. It had members that lived in the actual building. I'm not sure how many floors the building itself had, but maybe something like 30. And it just had really cool people. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just super cool. And they asked me one day, I was teaching a Pilates mat class for them. And the group fitness manager, Christine Foster, asked me, hey, you teach Pilates on the equipment, right? It was starting to get more and more popular. And she said a couple of the members were asking about the equipment and why don't you get the equipment? And she goes, are you certified in teaching on the apparatus? And I said, yes, I'd love to. So we started a program there and it just skyrocketed. It did really, really well. That's how I met Brett Hobell and Stacey Lee Krause. And they were both working for Equinox, huge a company. It was starting to get very big and a lot of great instructors were working for Equinox. And Brett introduced me. Yeah, Brett Hobell is total respect for him. I learned so much from him. He got me another job teaching with Joe Dowdell, who had a gym called Peak Performance. A lot of really amazing people worked there as well. And Brett Hobell ended up going on to California, moving to Cali. And he was one of the trainers on The Biggest Loser. So he's got, you know, a lot of amazing things going on himself. And I respect him and I learned so much from him. He introduced me to Stacey Lee Krause. And this woman really changed my life. Stacey Lee Krause created a class called Willpower and Grace. And Willpower and Grace was this combination of, to me, how I described it in the beginning, was this combination of Pilates and cardio. I always felt like Pilates was super genius, but also very fluid, slow, controlled, whereas Stacy brought in the element of power and cardio, vascular, and music. And I'll never forget walking into that first class. I thought it was going to be, you know, like a mat class. I didn't bring my shoes. I went and grabbed a mat and set it up in her class. And she walks in and she looked super different than any trainer I had seen. And to
she's
this day,
a force of nature.
To this day, everybody now is like a Stacy Lee Krause clone. Like, she had baggy cargo pants on, necklace chokers, bracelets, chunky rings.
Oh yeah. I tried it. I just wasn't cool enough to pull it off. But no, I share your respect and affection for Stacy. She's just amazing.
And she changed the way that I look at fitness on a very spiritual level. Like, Stacy, I wasn't practicing yoga at the time. And Stacy was already doing yoga in a very different way. Like, she had manifestos. She would get you to do that next squat jump by thinking about, if you had to, would you? Just the philosophy that I got from doing that class was so much more than a cardio class. And I would look forward to that. Even though the next day I couldn't sit on my toilet or walk down the subway steps, I would wait for that day where I could get back into that class with
great days
specifically. Yeah. And I became one of her first Willpower and Grace instructors. She then created a certification, and a lot of girls that were with us back then have gone on to do amazing, amazing things.
Yes. Great team. And this is also the intersection of me and you.
That's right.
This is kind of the crossroads of our friendship.
Yeah.
And so, and then there was somebody else on your team who actually got married to someone on my team.
That's right. Liz. Yes. Yeah. They're in Australia now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're still up in Noosa still, like, they're going to be leaving. I mean, that's so right. Noosa is kind of like the Azores of the South Pacific. I don't know if they're going to be leaving anytime soon. So my business partner and one of my best mates in the world, bar none, Richard Boyd, got married to Liz, and, you know, she was friends with you. And then me and you went out on a few dates. You had informed me that you prefer handsome men. I was like, all right, yeah, I can understand that. And
if that was the case, then you and I would still be together.
So
it was one date, by the way. It was two. Was it two dates? Okay. Well, anyway, and we're still friends, and that's
because that was a funny story with the restaurant. So yeah, but anyway, so we had become friends, and then, you know, so your life completely changed for the better at that point. And I watched, because there's so many phases in our friendship. So I watched you go through something else that was tragic, and then, like I said before, it's not like you became somebody else. It's like you became so much more of who you already were. And for me, as a friend who loves and adores you, that was inspiring, and it was beautiful to watch. Are you okay to talk about that?
Yeah. What part are you specifically referring to?
Okay. Well, so your dad.
Yeah. My dad. Yeah. 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 I'd love to talk about it. I think that I was so much more, I mean, no one can ever be prepared to lose somebody that they love. When my father died 22 years after my mother, I knew how blessed I was to have him that long. Watching his battle with cancer was very difficult. He had pancreatic cancer, which they say is one of the most painful cancers to have. And he was already 70, young. He was 76 years old and not a healthy, healthy human being. Had diabetes, had some heart issues in the past. And for someone to be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer already at the liver, we knew, my brother and I, that it wouldn't be long. And he actually lasted almost a year, 11 months. So that was also a gift of time that we had with him, knowing from our history, having lost my mother, what that all meant. So we wasted no time with that. I went home and my dad was a huge fan of soccer, specifically one soccer team called Sporting Clube Portugal. And he had never seen them live, ever. In all the years, especially the years after my mom died, he went back to the Azores, to the home that he had inherited after my grandparents died. Every summer he would spend 3 months there. And being so close to Lisbon, he had never, ever seen his team live. And he was literally born a Sporting fan. So my brother said to me that week when I got home after his diagnosis, I'm not going to ask the doctor how long. I don't want to know. But from my research, it won't be too long. And I want to ensure that dad doesn't give up as much as possible on the life that he still has. So I think we should take him to Portugal for him to finally see his dream soccer team play. It was the most amazing thing. I think it's just a testament to my parents and to the children that they raised. And leaving the island, immigrating to a country where they didn't speak the language. My father used to tell this story all the time. I had $200 in my pocket, a wife and two young children under the age of 10. And they wanted something different for their family. It was difficult with Salazar in Portugal, where they were being raised with that type of government. And so they just didn't want that to happen again. And that's why so many Azorians immigrated off of the islands. And my parents were two of them. And that taught my brother and I that anything is possible if we work for it and we really want it. And it was a reminder to my father, this is what you raised and there's no time to waste. So he had the strength, he conjured up the strength to get on that plane, because a lot of people will tell you not to get on a plane if you're sick, especially with cancer. And he did. And I really believe that's what kept him alive all that time. When we got back to Canada, it was around Christmas just before. So we said it was a Christmas present. When we got back to Canada, the joy on his face, just telling people about the experience.
It's a lifelong dream. Wow.
Yeah. One of the first things he said to my brother after 5 hours in the hospital, before the doctor sat down after all the tests and explained that he had pancreatic cancer already at the liver, they walked out of the hospital and he said to my brother, "Nunca mais vejo minha terra," which translated means "I will never again see my earth," which meant his island. And that's when my brother had the idea. I think we should take him to Lisbon and see his dream team. And from there, we jump a plane and we go back to Terceira, the island. And that kept him alive. And to this day, it saved me, because I cannot explain what it's like to lose a mother. I cannot explain what it's like to lose a father. We're all very different in our relationships, you know. Not everyone had a wonderful relationship with their parents. But when my father died, it was almost like being reborn an orphan. It was very, very strange. It was like I was floating in the universe without any support. It was very, very weird. But I did have support. And again, just like I mentioned when my mother died, I had so many things that I could turn to. But you need that period of mourning. And what these experiences in my life, specifically the big ones with losing my parents, have taught me is that I live the light and dark now. I understand that the price that we pay for such a deep love is loss. And that's how life is, isn't it? I heard somewhere, I did a a 5-day training with Ido Portal, who's a big movement teacher. He takes the word exercise and working out completely out of his vocabulary, movement culture. If you don't know Ido Portal, you definitely should. He is definitely worth a research. And I spent 5 days with him in Lisbon. A lot of coaches and trainers were there, and he had a team of 4 people, and his yogi, I'm embarrassed that I can't remember his name. I think Duda, but I forgot his last name. In one of our yoga sessions with him, he explained what he thought about life and death. And he said, you know, when we're born, we don't immediately start living. We immediately begin dying. And I don't look at that as a sad thing. It's the truth. And I don't know who quoted this, but I think we've all heard it maybe once. And what are you going to do with this one precious life?
And that, what I'm hearing is that was a turning point. That was like a rebirth for you, because I remember that period in your life. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you onto the podcast. I mean, listening to your history, people say, wow, this is quite an exciting life. It feels like she lived fully, but you were kind of over New York a little bit, and something was just like holding you back. You kind of wanted to go, but you know, you rationalize reasons to stay. And then you just like, I'm going to let you tell, you just completely packed up and just did everything you wanted to do.
Yeah. So backtracking just a little bit, when the Printing House Fitness and Racket Club, that mom and pop shop, was sold to the larger company, I was thinking maybe now it's time. I think at that point it was 12 years in New York. I didn't have anything really holding me in New York, and I could see a lot of my fitness colleagues and friends, they were bouncing from gym to gym, studio to studio, trying to make ends meet and pay the rent. And that, of course, takes a lot of time running around the city to do that. A couple classes here, a couple classes there. I had the luxury right off bat of master training, traveling the world, and then having the Printing House. That was it. Monday through Saturday, I was at the Printing House. I had plenty of hours. It was wonderful. I loved it. And now that was being taken away. So what was I going to do? Start running around teaching little classes here and there? That's not what I wanted to do. So I thought, you know what? Ever since my mom died, I've been searching for that ocean, just an ocean that I knew I was going to move back to. Ocean runs through my veins as an Azorean, I believe. Mm-hmm. Salt water runs through my veins. So I thought, you know, maybe now's the time. And my clients, those 8 years at the Printing House, said, no, 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 no. You're going to go find a room, a little space, paint the walls white, light some incense, get some music going, and buy a machine, and we're all going to go with you.
Give Bobby a text, have him help you move. Yeah,
yes! I remember that. So much fun. We did pizza yeah. Williamsburg loft.
That we had so much fun. We had so much fun, not only in the move, that place that you got. I'm just seeing an image of me, you, John Hardy, who I've probably talked about him before. He's just the loveliest. He's one of my favorite people in the world. He's also one of the few people who I would, because I don't use this word lightly, he truly is a genius. Him and Kev in your place, the Halloween party, that yeah. was, oh, that's where I met Natalie.
That's right.
Aponte, yeah. Yeah. And
ate all our cupcakes.
That's a story we're probably not going to get into here, but yes, there was a lot of cupcakes.
So good. The whole thing, just the loft, like talking about that loft, like that was amazing. That shit doesn't happen anymore. Oh, so
that was the
first
best.
Of all, the little loft that I found in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, before Williamsburg, Brooklyn blew up, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. I always seem to like be ahead of the curve with Pilates, with the Williamsburg. And then
you're a woman who knows her lofts. Yes.
I love open spaces and natural yeah. light. Hey, at least I know what I like. Right. So I find this loft downtown Manhattan, a block away from where the World Trade Centers were. At this point, it's 2010. So they're just two big holes in the ground, right? Being being built. Yeah, they were still cleaning up down there. And so a lot of people had moved out of that area, that financial district, when the towers went down, the World Trade Center 9/11 happened. And I went there, I actually Googled live workspaces and that came up, and the apartment was on the second floor and it was number 2B. And as soon as I walked in there, I was like, this place is exactly that. It's meant to be. It was a dream. If you don't know the movie Flashdance, watch it. It was my Flashdance dream come true, except I was a movement professional and not a dancer. And I got clients, all of them supported me. They all bought a big package so I could get the money together to pay first, last, and deposit and get all the Pilates equipment. You remember that place. I mean, it was 1,000 square feet, 14 foot ceilings, hardwood floors, brick walls. It was amazing.
It was gorgeous. The neighborhood, the outlay of it. It was just great.
Yeah. So then 10 years later, I was lucky enough to be there for a decade. And then the corporate monster comes in again, because that's New York and that's what happens. And they said, okay, we're going to change this. We're going to change your open space livelihood, where you make all your money to pay for. And we're going to put a wall from floor to ceiling and make it a 2-bedroom and completely revamp it, all new appliances, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and by the way, we're going to charge double. Are you okay with that? And I looked around, I tried to find something else, but then that's when I knew it was time. It's time to go. Nothing again was holding me to New York City. 22 years later, you know what? I had done it. It was wonderful. I loved it. But I had been going back and forth to the Azores with my program, Body Roots Azores, that was born after my dad died. And it was born just before he passed away. He gave me the idea, really. And I decided, okay, it's time. It's time to leave. So I said goodbye to New York City and I packed everything, sold the rest of it, gave the rest of it away, and jumped a plane in July 2019 to Portugal.
Wow. Yeah. And you started your own company. I was watching this from afar. I was living in Singapore at the time and just watching this whole evolution. So what business were you in? What were you doing? Cause it's quite unique.
Yeah. So that last year, 2015, when my dad was still alive, that was the year that he was battling cancer. Not only did we make it that December for him to make it back to the island and see the soccer team play, but a few months later in July, we all, 15 of our family, made it back to the island one more time. And it was then that inflatable paddle boards had become very popular. And I was so excited to christen my first inflatable paddleboard on the island that gave us both life. And we got there and he didn't make it out of the house very often because at that point he was really in a lot of pain. But one day he woke up and he had some energy and he asked if I wanted him to take me to a place on the island where he thought it would be very safe for me to do my, you know, exercise on the paddleboard. And I said, of course, yes. And that day we were standing at the edge of the rock together, looking at this body of water in our island. And that's when the idea came to me that I've been searching for an ocean all my life. And I've wanted to do retreats, but I didn't know what kind of retreats. But, you know, a lot of people were going to Mexico, Tulum, Costa Rica was popular, but I never felt a pull to go there because it just didn't feel like it was authentic. And then suddenly here I was standing on the island that I loved so much. And there it was right under my nose. Why couldn't I bring people here to experience this Atlantis that is so untouched? And that's exactly how Body Roots Azores was born. And the very next summer, I created a floating fitness studio where I have a little pod in the middle, 10 paddle boards just jetty out from that pod attached by a little bungee. And I bring people to the island to experience.
And people have to see this because your classes are packed. Like you're in the middle of the oceans, people around you and they're on their boards and it's having a brilliant time. Like, so where can we see some of these images? Like, where can we find more about you?
Bodyroots.com, baby.
Yeah, you've got shameless plug. No, but you have to see these images because there's nothing that we can say. I don't think we're articulate enough to describe how pristine and beautiful not only the surroundings are, but what happens in those classes. You have to actually watch that for yourself to see the extent of how this whole vision comes to fruition.
Yeah. So,
I think what I'm getting out of this is, you know, when like Nietzsche said, when man, and I'm sure he meant woman as well, has a strong enough why, he can bear any how. And to me, your life, you know, it, no matter how great it was and exciting from your early 20s arriving in New York, there was just something else that you were in, that was whispering inside of you that you really needed to do. So you're going through all this and exciting and you're getting to travel, but there's this whisper, and you know, I've been friends with you for a while. I saw you just ignore it for a while, and it's getting louder, louder, louder. And then it becomes this scream, and there's events in your life. So you're able to tap into, and it's one of the reasons why we're friends is because you're so tuned in empathetically to people around you, and you're able to see what's going on with them and pull lessons for your own life and almost like take cues and directions where through your interaction with others, you're able to engage in self-discovery. And that seems to amplify your level of courageousness. What is your advice for people who they kind of know that there's something whispering to them, but for whatever reason, I've invested so much, and I've been here in this job for years, or in this relationship that's not working out for years, or, but what about the risk? And, you know, the reason why people never get off their couch and go chase their dreams, they can't get off the couch. Their butts are enormous. And I'm not speaking anatomically. I'm speaking metaphorically. I would, but
like, yeah.
So what do you do? When it seems like your butt's just too big?
What if you didn't have tomorrow? Mm. I think that's the thing that we all say. Everybody's heard it, right? Live every day like it was your last. It will be. Mm. And I think the problem with time is we all think we have it.
I like to live every day as if like it was my last month, because it was my last day. I was like, all right, would I really brush my teeth today? Would that really, I don't know.
So. That's great. And I think that's even better. Your last month, that's still just 30 days. You got 30 days left. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah. I was always one of those people that, you know, had my plan and everything was, you know, it was about work and you know, for, it still is, but not because of the work, but because of the craft. But it was about achievement and study harder and stay at the, like first one into the office, last one out. And then, you know, living downtown during 9/11, just about as far from the World Trade Center as you were in the other direction. But actually when the towers came down, I got so deathly ill and I started to, oh, wait, is this really who I want to be? And then I moved to England straight after that. And I met this amazing woman, Helen Chapman. And we had so many conversations about your shoulds versus what's authentically inside of you. And I thought, okay, yeah, it's not, I for better, for worse. And it, in some ways it's been challenging. In some ways it's really served me to live as if, okay, this is the last 6 months you have, you know? What if you were ill and 6 months from now, lights out, would you be doing this? And I'm not saying I've always been true to this, but for the most part, yeah, it's like, if I would not be doing this with 6 months to live, I'm not doing this and I don't care.
Yeah.
Because at one point.
I'd be lying if I said that every day was like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them are. And there's this meditation that I've, this woman, Sarah Blondin, I found her on the Insight Timer app. And she to me, her meditation is like poetry. I don't feel like I have to sit there and try and quiet my mind and just hear what she's saying. I literally just get some myofascia release tools, like some balls or foam rollers, flex band. And it's like a moving meditation for me, because that's what keeps me consistent. And consistency, in my opinion, is the magic pill. So that's what keeps me sane and able to start my day and take care of myself, mind and body, so then I can go take care of my clients. And Sarah Blondin has a meditation called Make It Sacred. And when we were all in lockdown together in the global pandemic, how could we find any positives from this? We were all in such pain and unknowing and stress, and no one knew what to do. And how could I looked to a lot of my yogi teachers and people on social media to see, what were they saying? What am I supposed to do? How can I get through this? And no one really had any answers. But when I listened to that meditation, and it was only about, I think, 12 minutes or so, it made so much sense to me. We take everything for granted. Even now, as we start to emerge back out of being locked in our own homes, mm-hmm. you know, I think we're still taking so much for granted. You know, there should, in my opinion, be a closer connection between community and all of us, where I feel like it's almost creating more of a divide between rich and poor. It's very sad, but the one thing and the only thing that we can really do for ourselves is look after our health, our one and only mind, body health, the best mm-hmm. way we can. You know, there's so much out there that we can research. Your podcast with Dr. Perry was just amazing. And I will use the word genius.
He is brilliant.
He is absolutely brilliant. And just breathing alone, you know, it's principle number one in life and movement and all of the things that it does for us. But yet we take it for granted on the regular. And just to actually take one deep consciously taken breath is meditation. If mm-hmm. we just take that pause, you know, and the more consistent we become with something, the more we start to feel like we're in our own skin. And body awareness is the advanced, not the posture, not the speed, not the load. It's awareness. What is it that we need? And I feel like there's so much out there in our world that numbs us from that connection that it's very sad. You know, we end up looking to the next Instagram post or profile. Oh, look what they're doing, or look how fast they're going, or look at their form. A lot of us, I think a lot of people don't realize that when you look at someone's yoga platform, social media, and they're in this backbend that you might never be able to do, a lot of these bodies are hypermobile. And that's why they can do this. They were doing this in the womb. You know, we're all built differently. And that's something that gets thrown around a lot. Listen to your body. You know, that's a skill too. Mm-hmm. Or make sure you do what feels right for you, but yet teach in a different way. I think as coaches and as teachers, it's really our responsibility to hone that speech. Everyone is different. We're all structurally built differently. We all need different things, just like you, your conversation with Dr. Perry. Not every diet is for everybody. I think not every posture, there's a yoga form. You know, you don't have to think about it as the asana or the physical, the posture, but there is some sort of yoga for everybody. But not every posture is for everybody. Mm. And once you build that relationship with yourself, that awareness, which is so undervalued in our movement world, that's the advanced. The advanced is in the subtleties. And I think modification.
I love that. The advanced is in the subtleties. That is such a poignant.
Oh, I wish I could take credit for that. That's Jason Crandell, my yoga teacher trainer. When I did my advanced certification with him, I could listen to him like you talk for hours. The advanced is in the subtleties. And that was a big click for me. Learn your body's technique, he also said, but then don't be afraid to use it. And that was another turning point in my career, because then I came back to the loft after doing that certification with him. And I took the root, the basic anatomical root that I learned in Pilates, which is still the seed to everything I do. And I started flying on those machines. I started doing all sorts of things that weren't quote unquote Pilates, but I knew what the root was. I knew how to stabilize myself. I knew how to mobilize myself. And I also knew that there's not a big difference between mobility and stability. They're all working together. The systems are all working together. So with water and with Body Roots Azores, I'd say maybe in 2004, I got on a paddleboard. The inflatables weren't out yet. I was on vacation in Canada, Lake Erie, I think, at my cousin Olga's house, and I wanted to try it, but I got really bored with paddling. I was like, ah, this is cool. Got my bearings, you know, I fell off once or twice, and then, oh, okay, I get it, core. Okay, I got it, started paddling. And then I put the paddle down and I thought, what would it be like to plank on here? Ooh, the Pilates teaser, basically a seated inverted V. Oh, let's try a headstand. Bobby, I never had so much fun, quote unquote, exercising, playing with water and board. And that is what changed my world. And I really wish back in the day, I would have thought, oh, a paddleboard Pilates, let's do this. But I didn't. I got certified with someone else, Jillian Jabri, who was very smart and brought paddleboard yoga out into the mainstream. And that's when I just decided this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, because it combines water, the most amazing element in nature. We can't live without it. It combines movement. It combines vitamin D, fresh air, my island roots, the team that I've created there that supported me over the last 5 years since it started. I can't even say enough about. And I get to introduce people to an Atlantis. It feels like you are literally in Atlantis, like a lost world of Atlantis. It's like being thrown back 100 years, but still having Wi-Fi. Like there's there's cows on the roads, the farmers walking their cows. You have to stop your car so the cows can pass. Goat pass. I almost sounded like you. And you spoke about this earlier. You touched on it. My friend Carrie Harnsberger and I that run the retreats together there, we've been told so many times that we did not do it justice once people get there. And I know why. A few reasons is, well, once I'm Azorean, I'm from the island, so people think I'm trying to sell it, you know, and make money. But once they get there, I'll never forget someone on our hike. We do this hike literally to clouds, higher than clouds on the island. And one of the locals of our Azorean team asked one of our participants, so how are you liking the Azores so far? And she literally was flabbergasted, jaw dropped. And she goes, I'm running out of adjectives for this place. Like it literally is just mind blowing. And I get to do something that I love, that I believe in, all wrapped in the arms of my ancestors. You know, it's kind of this beautiful full circle. Like my parents left the island to give their kids a better life. And here we are now with this better life and this education of really evolving their immigrant dream back on the island, living just an magnified dream.
As we start to come to the end of this episode, I'm thinking like, what is the common root, if you will, of this entire conversation? What's the theme? And to me, it's your journey deeper into self-awareness. And to me, self-awareness is the key to or the lock on any transformation, whether you're talking about physical, spiritual, career. It all starts with deepening your level of self-awareness. I just want to say thank you for sharing with us and coming on the show. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Visit us at theselfhelpantidote.com to share your feedback, insights, and recommendations on what topics you'd like us to explore in the future.